Yeah, but as you said, as soon as you think you've seen it all, something else comes up. Now, you kind of make a distinction also in the sellers, the selling doctor. You said some selling doctors need, you know, they just want an exit strategy, and some need a life, as you say. What's the difference there? Is a great term you're using. And how does that change the arrangement or the potential success of the arrangement?
Okay, well, you know, there's sort of like three kinds of practice transitions. The first one we talked about was an outright sale. That's real easy. The second one is this kind of complex partnership arrangement where the seller, you know, 5, 6, 7 years before he wants to retire, needs an exit strategy, so he needs somebody to buy his practice. This is the most complicated thing, and is fraught with all kinds of these situations that we've been discussing. A third kind of transition, which is a partnership, what seems to be much easier is when a seller, usually younger than the kind of thing that we've been talking about, is just overwhelmed. He or she is in a situation where their practice is just growing incrementally. You know, they're working four and a half days a week. They come in on their day off. They come in on nights in order to be able to see things. They're almost not diagnosing dentistry in order because of the fact that they don't have any place to put these people. There's a tremendous demand on their time. They're scheduled out 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. They need a life. I mean, I'm dealing with a relatively young doctor in his mid-40s who is just, he's got five kids and is in this kind of situation. He just is getting so burnt out because he needs somebody to be able to share this practice with. So here's an opportunity where, you know, you can bring in this partner. There's not going to be something where this 45-year-old is going to be retiring in 5 years. This is going to be a different kind of a partnership. And I, obviously, you still have to do the legal, and you still have to do your due diligence, and you still have to identify what, you know, what the what-ifs could be. But I see this as a much different kind of partnership, and there are not nearly as many potential problems with that.
So this is more or less just two or maybe three or maybe four dentists kind of banding together to have a true group practice where they're all partners.
Absolutely. And there's a reason for them to become having these partners to come in, because they can't grow the practice, they can't manage the practice without it. They don't want to have an associate mill, so to speak, you know, that every year or two somebody's coming in. You know, they need somebody that they can grow this practice with over a period of time, possibly more locations, possibly expansion. I mean, those are that is not necessarily the exit strategy that I'm talking about. And this kind of a partnership is usually a much more successful one.
Got it. Sounds great. Well, hey, how about some other situations? Are there any other types of practice transitions that you see? It sounds like you've covered the, you know, kind of the main ones, but what else is out there?
Well, over the years, there are two other situations that I've had an opportunity to get involved with and I'd like to make the listeners aware of. And these are both what I call below-the-radar transitions. The first example is when the practice of a doctor, say 2 to 4 years away from retirement, is acquired and merged into the buyer's location. So the pitch to the patients of this doctor who's being acquired is that there's going to be better coverage, there's a better location, there's better parking. I was having trouble negotiating the terms of a new lease, that kind of thing. So the acquired doctor appears to just have moved his location. But in reality, at the time of this move, he has sold the practice, but he continues to work as an associate. This is what I call below the radar, because to the community and to the patients in this practice, nothing has changed. I mean, the doctor's name is on the door and the letterhead. He continues to see all of his own patients, including the hygiene checks. All of his staff, or most of them, come over in the transition. He, of course, no longer shares in the hygiene revenue and is paid a percentage on his or her own production or collections. That revenue is how the buyer leverages the purchase of this, so that this kind of transition can happen with 100% bank financing and the buyer never takes any money out of his or her own pocket. When the selling doctor eventually retires, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, all of the patients are used to coming to the new location and will, of course, remain. I have seen this work out very, very successfully on a number of occasions. It's really a terrific, terrific idea.
It sounds like the absolute best way to do it.
Yeah, I think...
But the buyer needs an established practice already, so it can't be a buyer with nothing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, usually this kind of person, you know, has got a nice, normal dental practice, you know, maybe one hygienist, maybe one and a half hygienist. Never been a particular great big superstar or whatever, just a normal kind of average day practice. And that is like sort of merged into maybe a larger practice that's maybe more update, more treatment rooms, you know, higher technology. And so it's a nice thing. It's not a downgrade for the patients. It's an upgrade. And so the perception that my doctor is still taking care of me, he's just moved his location, is really terrific. So nobody knows about this. To everybody, it's like this doctor is still in control, still whatever, because that doctor is still seeing the patients. But what you have here is a situation where the practice is paid for by the hygiene revenue, usually, and the acquiring doctor makes a very nice piece of change on this person working as his associate. And then when the doctor finally does retire or starts cutting back, you know, doesn't have to leave all at once, it's going from 4 days a week to 3 days a week to 2 days a week. I mean, all these patients still stay in the practice. So you get like 100% patient transfer. It's a very, very good situation in the right situation.
And I've got to say, over the years, I think I've heard hundreds of times that the best way, absolute best way to grow your practice is to purchase a practice that's, you know, maybe not performing as well as yours, maybe a little bit of a lower grade practice, and merge it into yours. And just, you know, economically and efficiency wise and patient transition wise and all those things, total winner.
It is. And I know personally in my own clinical career, I did this 3 times. I always made, in the first year, I made 100% return on my investment. I mean, I wish I could say that about the stock market. I mean, you know, you're buying a business of which you know a lot about. You know, you can get economies of scale. You can be able to transition these people in. It is a really, really terrific thing to do. I think you just got to sort of start looking out there. Okay, are there these kinds of practices to buy?
Definitely.
Some doctors, believe it or not, Rich, they don't even think about what they're going to do with their practice. They're not wired that way. They just keep going, and then all of a sudden, someday, gee, I wonder what I'm going to do. I think that there are listeners in this audience that might be a little bit more, sophisticated, intuitive, and aggressive. You can look and find these kinds of situations